This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
And I'm telling you, everybody's here. Captain Ron, Robert, saw Otto earlier. He's good to go. Chester's sound asleep. Fuller's got his man, Buddy West.
The big man is stretched out right here.
He's your man.
Just in case you need.
They were whining this morning about 6:25. Fuller was crying. I said, he's going to be here. Don't worry. He's coming.
Yeah. Well,
you rolled in here with some burritos.
Yeah, I had a little sausage burrito this morning.
Didn't share with the dogs.
No sharing. That's
gotten off to a rocky start here on a Wednesday, but you'll be all right. Yeah. I'll talk him into it.
How you doing?
I am great.
Good.
Madness has begun.
Yeah, last night.
NIT last night. Big boys in Dayton.
Johnny Jones and Mike Woodson putting wins down in the book last night.
All counts. Yeah. We're down to 66.
Big Ten still got some teams in there.
Got off to a better start than it did a year
ago.
I'd
say so.
I just hope the ACC gets off to a good start tonight against the Big Ten.
Yeah, no kidding. Tonight we get Rutgers and Notre Dame. That's the second ball game of the, opening round now?
First four
in Dayton. You see, BPI's got Notre Dame at 61.1.
Don't get me started. It's too early
for that. So anyway, Notre Dame tonight. We also got a pair of NIT games too. Wake Forest hosts the Towson Tigers out of the CAA, and Virginia welcomes Mississippi State to John Paul Jones Arena. That ball game, by the way, is on ESPN tonight.
We'll get into all that, but first, Wes. Yesterday by the good folks at FedEx. Give them some free advertising here.
Came right to the door, did they?
Rang the doorbell. Dogs did not care for it. They heard the dog, if it's a UPS truck.
Fuller thinks there's food, by the way.
Of course. If it's a UPS truck or a FedEx truck, the boys know it's coming down the street.
Is that right?
They were not happy.
Not happy. Okay.
So this comes from Jill Mickle.
No, this is Holland's mother.
That's Holland's mom.
Holland's mom sent us this.
All right, here you go. This is for you. I know you've probably seen this before.
My godfather wrote this book.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do I know it? I wrote it.
No. Smith Barrier, my godfather, did this book. The ACC Basketball Tournament Classic. And it's a picture book. You got a note?
Attaboy. Of course.
By the way, all the pictures were made in the book by Hugh Morton, one of the legendary
photographers,
Grandfather Mountaineer. And there's my godfather, Smith Barrier, the late Smith Barrier, who was one of the gurus of writing in the ACC. So there you go. Those are the two guys. Those are legends in the ACC. Those two guys right there for sure.
All right.
I got
a note.
Got to put the Mark Packard design glasses on.
That's exactly right. Jill Mickle says, Pack and Wes.
Hey, Jill.
It's Monday morning. I have the Monday blues.
Oh, no.
But not because of the day. Tonight is the first Monday in 6 weeks that the tournament docuseries will not be on. Promotion for John Dahl right there.
Yeah, John, how about that?
She says, it was terrific. I loved it. Mm-hmm. Enclosed is a memory of days gone by. I thought it might find a new home in the basement. If you already have one, please feel free to find a new home for it. Hmm. Love the show. Friend of the show, Jill.
Holland's mom.
That's it.
Hey, Holland, your mom's writing letters to the show.
We will put Jill's handwritten note on the handwritten note board up here behind me. Because I am pro handwritten note.
There are some classics in here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Jill.
It's like a storybook time here.
What's with storybooks?
On the left, far left of this picture, is Gene Cargan.
God bless him.
Yep. Who is Boo Cargan's dad, was the AD of Virginia. That's the night the Cavaliers won.
And Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame, later commissioner of the ACC, who was the athletic director at UVA. Wait, I had to hold this. I don't know, Rich, if you can shoot the bottom right here. I don't know how good a picture you can get. The gentleman with the paw painted on his head, Pack.
That's me.
No, it's not. It's you still had hair at this point.
It's Johnny Bench.
I don't know who it is.
Johnny Bench.
It doesn't matter. There's Jeff Crompton, by the way, making a dive on a play against Ed Thurman of Wake Forest.
It was not ruled a foul back then.
No, that's not a foul.
Protecting Dean Smith on that call.
Look at the guy with the head painted, Pack.
I told you. I know that guy. There's like 48,000 just like him on game day.
Stop.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about. All right, we appreciate the book, though. We will find a home for it.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
In fact, Wes may just take it with him right out the door.
No. I got one of these. I have one of these in Cartersville.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Great pictures in here, though. All Holy cow.
Let's concentrate on the show.
I'm with you. Okay. I'm with you. Right. Thanks, Jill. Appreciate it. So we start tonight with Notre Dame and just five teams in the ACC. Mike Bray's got them back there for the 13th time in his tenure. What are we thinking tonight against Rutgers?
I got a bad vibe. I got to be honest with you. I do. Which is good news for Notre Dame. I think this is a tough game for the Irish. I do.
Wow.
Why are you looking at me like I'm crazy?
No,
I know
I'm
you're
interested,
a BPI guy.
No,
you
got, I'm interested in more
waking up the echoes over there and all that stuff. I hope Notre Dame wins by 100. I do.
I think
this is a tough game.
Well, we talk about scoring, and we talk about Rutgers and toughness and Notre Dame and the way they shoot the ball and the way they move the ball up and down the floor. And it's interesting to have these conversations prior to the tournament about key elements that have to be kind of like core four, if you will, in the tournament, basics. And for Notre Dame, we always talk about three-point shooting, and you mentioned the 10 threes. If Notre Dame hits 10 threes,
good thing.
It's a really good thing. But it also feels like if Notre Dame can stop some people, because they got a track record of stopping people. If they get you to a certain number or below, they got a chance to win. Like 65 or less? How about this?
I'll be honest with you. I don't think Rutgers is going to score 65 on Notre Dame.
Okay.
I just think this is going to be a street fight. I hope Notre Dame gets them running, because if the Irish can get up and down the court and start making it a free-flowing game, I like Notre Dame to win comfortably.
Problem is, you're not sure that can happen.
I don't know if they can do that. You know why? Because the last time I saw them play, and you mentioned it yesterday, and you were spot on, Virginia Tech got in their grill and said, no, we're not letting you do this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Rutgers does.
Yeah.
They will absolutely force you to play, hey, we're playing our game tonight.
Right.
But if Notre Dame can get them spread, shoot, run, let's go. I like Notre Dame. I do. But I think this is a tough game. This is a tough game.
Yeah.
Don't have a great vibe on it.
Well, this has to happen tonight, I think, for Notre Dame to win. I think they have to score from the perimeter.
Yep.
They got to spread Rutgers out.
Yep.
And that just failed to happen last Thursday night in Brooklyn against Virginia Tech.
Exactly right.
You know, and there is that finality about this whole thing now, right? We talked about that this week. For Notre Dame, you're back on this stage. And for me, you've got the kind of team that can win a game or two. In fact, I think we both commented that the team that wins tonight's got a really good chance to win again.
I think I'm going to talk about the 11s a lot today on the show, but this is an 11-line game.
Sure.
I think the winner of this game is going to beat Alabama, my opinion. I may be dead wrong. Bama's the weirdest team in college basketball. The weirdest team. When they're good, they are great. They're like Final Four great. When they're bad, they're bad.
Yeah.
We've seen five first four winners make it to the Sweet 16. So teams that come out of this bracket, whether we're talking about like Indiana last night, the winner of this game, we have seen traditionally first four winners, somebody emerge and get some momentum into the tournament, right?
Yeah, so VCU, I think, went all the way to the Final Four, right?
UCLA, yep. I mean, we go through the whole list. But I like the 11 seeds in this tournament. I mean, you look across every one of the 11-6 matchups, like Michigan, Colorado State. Michigan's the 11th seed. I kind of like the Wolverines. I mean, no disrespect to the Mountain West Conference. You go through all of them.
Right.
And I'm like, I kind of like the 11 better than I like the 6. I like Virginia Tech better than I like Texas. That's an 11-6.
Yeah.
So you never know, right? The tournament, I just think there's so much even competition across the land. You start doing these matchups. I say it all the time. The more you read, the more you study, the dumber you get on game day. But I just think we're going to have such great competitive games. Mm-hmm. And this one tonight with Notre Dame-Rutgers feels like a fistfight.
Yeah. It
really does.
Be interesting. Because even in the little bits I watched last night, and I watched a couple NIT games as well, it was – and I'll give you an example. I watched a little bit of Texas A&M and Alcorn State.
Buzz Williams tired of complaining yet? I'm tired of Buzz complaining, to be honest with you.
He went 7.5 minutes in the press conference last night.
You didn't get in. I'm sorry. You have a really good team, but don't go a month without winning a game.
He delivered a state of the message, state of the union last night.
He was ripping into committee members. It's like, hey, Buzz. And I love Buzz Williams, as you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan, but hey, you didn't get in.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You got to move on.
Yeah.
Enough.
But I was watching that game last night trying to see how fast in an elimination event, and that's what makes all this different, right? Whether it's NIT, NCAA, any of the other letters and consonants involved in a tournament. The finality of this for like a Texas A&M last night, I wanted to see kind of how they played. Even in the Vanderbilt-Belmont game, which ended up being 10 points but was a one-possession game up until about the final minute and a half, even in Indiana-Wyoming, the early stages of that game, how was the tempo going? How was it being called? What was the, you know, how did all that kind of fit together? And I thought that was pretty interesting to watch. And I think tonight with Notre Dame and Rutgers, it's amplified by style of play. I think it really is, especially with the way you're talking about Rutgers and Notre Dame.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. By the way, can we give a shout-out to Dayton, Ohio?
They do a great job.
They are awesome, man. Yep. To me, Dayton, Ohio, hosting the first four, to me, is kind of reminiscent of what Omaha does with the college baseball. You know, they've taken an event and have owned it. And yep. I swear to you, every year when we start this tournament in Dayton, it does not matter who shows up, who doesn't matter, who's in the four games. That community is a great, it's a great, not good,
right.
great basketball town. Maybe one of the most underrated basketball communities in the country.
Have you ever been there for a game?
I have.
It's great.
And it's in the, and they've renovated the building, but man, the fans show up, they support it. And it doesn't matter, 11 seeds, 12 seeds, 16 seeds. Dayton, Ohio, man, you get a thumbs up from me. They do a tremendous job hosting an event. You know, there's a lot of places you could put that event, and you could shoot a bazooka in the joint and not hit anybody.
That's right.
That place is packed. It's loud. It's enthusiastic. And it really feels like the tournament starts in Dayton. Yeah. Really, they do a great job.
No, no doubt about it. By the way, two ACC teams in the NIT tonight. 7 o'clock in Winston-Salem. Steve Forbes' team, who obviously did not make it after the tournament loss to Boston College, they host Towson out of the CAA. That game is available tonight on the ESPN app and ESPN Plus. And then about 7 o'clock as well on ESPN2 tonight, you'll get Mississippi State and Virginia. That's the second of the two ACC teams involved in the NIT, and that ball game coming from John Paul Jones Arena tonight on ESPN2 at 7 o'clock. So keep an eye on those two games as well. Ben Howell and Tony Bennett, a couple former guys who used to ramble out in the Pac-12, looking up here.
You know, and I looked this up because I was just curious, because that's kind of a strange matchup, Virginia-Mississippi State.
And the reason they're playing, by the way, in Charlottesville is the hump was unavailable.
Right.
Mississippi State's actually the 3 seed in that quad bracket or whatever NIT format you buy into.
The first time these two teams met, I wrote this down because I was intrigued because I didn't know if they had ever played before. Mm. They have. First time they met was 1928.
What?
Yeah.
That was the first time?
1928.
Okay.
So we're coming up on the 100-year anniversary of the Virginia-Mississippi State basketball game.
Wonder where they played that.
Well, hold on. I'm not done. There's more.
Oh, okay.
The Hoos lost that game 44-28. And the reason I bring that up is I really hope tonight that we get more than 44 and 28 points scored, respectively. Because both of those teams, at times, can get stuck offensively. Both of them. So I hope we don't have a revisit of the 1928 classic, 44-28.
When was the last time they played? Do you know that?
88 or 87. Oh. So it's been a while.
There's one player walking in the John Paul Jones Arena tonight might have the shakes. Garrison Brooks.
Is that right?
Oh. Has he beat – has never beaten Virginia.
It's not good, is it?
0-6. And – DeAndre Hunter set one down on him on a Saturday afternoon, as I recall, in that building a couple of years ago. So,
well,
tough night for the
we'll see what happens.
Maroon Dogs.
NIT.
Yeah. All right. Plenty of show.
When's that CBI thing get started?
I think it's kind of underway.
It is or is not?
I think it is. I'm not quite sure.
Nobody has any idea.
Well, I'm not, you know.
Is it just a clandestine thing? Is that what the C stands for, clandestine?
CIA sponsors the CBI.
Clandestine basketball invitational.
I think it starts Saturday. And by the way, there's another.
It starts Saturday?
Yeah.
They get a loser from one of these tournaments that you automatically qualify for that event? Is that how that works? I mean, why are we doing that?
All right.
It's like the Senate yesterday passing a bill worrying about daylight.
Oh, no.
I mean, we're thinking about of all the things going on in our country that
I was just trying to go to break.
Hold on a sec. With all the things that we need to worry about in our country, We got our leaders in D.C. Are they worried about the name, image, and likeness? No, they're not.
No.
They're dealing with daylight savings time. What are we doing, Wes? What are we doing?
Seriously. Just trying to go to commercial.
Can you imagine going, hey, I got 1,000 things to do today. But before we get to that, I think all of us should get together and let's write a bill about daylight savings time.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wondering why you should play the number one bracket game in America? Well, it's free to play, and filling out your bracket has never been easier. With just one tap, our autofill tool helps you fill out as many as 25 different brackets. Tip-off is almost here, so download and fill out your bracket now with the ESPN Tournament Challenge app.
Piece of cake, one button.
Yeah.
Remember, it should take less than 2 minutes to fill out a bracket.
That would be the thought, right?
That is my theory. And you're going to be in mine's going to be in the trash can by Friday, so I don't even care.
I hope you're filling out on the Tournament Challenge app, by the way. You can go to the Tournament Challenge app, available wherever you have your platforms for your applications. And you can use the app and join our ACC network pool. Looks like many of you have. We appreciate that. Now, once again, you have some principles about bracketology that need to be known here.
My theory on doing the bracket is simple.
Okay.
Instinct. You have 2 minutes to fill out the bracket out. Don't think it. Just whatever you see, go. Go. And it doesn't really matter.
Just see the game, make a pick.
Just make a pick.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what they're seated, just make a pick.
All right.
And the reason for it is your bracket's going to be terrible, first of all. I mean, you got no shot. And anybody that brags about their bracket, I laugh at people like that because you have no idea what you're doing. It's pure luck, right? And the more you read, the more you study, the dumber you get.
Yeah.
So really, the more educated you are, probably the worse you're going to be.
That's
in the bracket.
I like that. Yeah.
And so my theory
is, might get an upset or two.
You
but
may
on
get
the whole,
one right, yeah. And you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have 22 of 32 in the first round, and go, oh my God, it's a disaster. That's exactly right. So they're going to be in the trash by Friday. So that's why I spend 2 minutes. I waste 2 minutes of my week on one bracket and one bracket only, and I don't worry about it.
That's it.
I know it's going to be bad. I don't care. I don't care. And if you know what? If they're if it rocks, I still don't care.
Sorry.
Because it's just inevitable. I mean, the brackets are just drive you crazy.
All right. So based on that principle, folks, here's Mark Packer's Sweet 16.
Whatever is on there, don't worry about it because it won't matter.
Wow. Four ones? Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Four ones and four
all
twos.
All the twos and all the threes.
And so what I'm basically telling you is there's no way mine is going to make any sense whatsoever because you're going to get double-digit seeds into the Sweet 16. I've told you that. Last year, we had 9 double-digit seeds win first-round games, 4 of which made it to the Sweet 16. So my list up there, I'm just telling you ahead of time. If yours looks like that right there, you are screwed.
Okay.
Period.
All right.
So there it is.
There you go. All right. I'll give you my Sweet 16, and I do take all four ones
wow,
into the Sweet 16.
Ones?
And I took all the twos. I didn't take all the threes. I did take 3 of the fours, which is interesting. Virginia Tech's my only double-digit seed
like
that
11s.
Makes the Sweet 16.
I got a theory on 11s, too. I like your Virginia Tech pick, by the way.
Yeah.
You know why? 11 is a good number in the Sweet 16. I went back and looked this up. Bear with me for a second. For all you folks that like to overanalyze the brackets, this is for you. Last year, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a tournament in 20.
Right.
In 19, we had a 12 seed, but not an 11. In 18, we had an 11 seed make the Sweet 16. In 17, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16. In 16, we made an 11 made the Sweet 16. 15, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16. In 14, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16. In 13, we didn't have an 11, but we had a 12, a 13, and a 15 make the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
In 12, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16. In 11, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16. In 10, we had an 11 make the Sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
You get the trend?
There you go.
Get it all over you. So
all
I
right.
like your 11 pick with the Hokies.
All right, here's your final four, by the way. Mark's already... Gonzaga, Kentucky, Tennessee, Kansas.
Kind of boring. I know it. Zags are a 1. Kansas is a 1. Kentucky's a 2. Tennessee's a 3. There you have it.
No, I'm okay with that.
Oh, great.
I think we have four different Final Four teams. Yep. Arkansas, UCLA, Villanova, Wisconsin.
I did read a stat the other day for all you folks that really like to analyze the brackets. Teams that lose their first game in conference play, in tournament play, have never won the Natty.
So you tell me Arkansas didn't have a chance?
I'm saying the stat, I'll give it to you again. If you lost in the first round of your respective conference tournament,
right?
Nobody.
Your has first won game?
The
your
first one.
Yeah.
You have not seen that team win a national championship.
How about that?
That's just for you. That's the kind of breakdown you really want to get doing all this stuff.
It's really good. Man, you have come up with some nuggets.
The more you read, I know all kinds of stuff. Sure. I could spend days trying to do a bracket. Okay. I refuse to do it. I will spend 2 minutes of my week on my bracket, and that is it.
Yeah.
And when it stinks, I'm going to go like this. Oh, yeah, it does stink. Hmm. And it took me 2 minutes to get there.
Couple of notes in addition to our picks. And by the way, the tournament challenge available till about noon tomorrow when the tournament starts. Hope you'll get in. There are more than 7 million people have submitted a bracket at ESPN.com.
It'll be up to about 9 million by the time we get done with this show.
I hope so. We'll be driving the .com, as they say.
2 minutes.
Associated Press named their All-America team yesterday.
Yeah.
Paolo Banchero of Duke, third team All-America, is the only ACC player.
Explain that one to me, please. List. You're a guy that likes to vote. I refuse to vote on any of this stuff.
I do not have a vote in this one.
How's that possible?
Just
asking. I mean, good for Paolo.
Yeah.
Congratulations. But wait a minute. I thought the Player of the Year award in our league came down to two guys, of which none of them were named Paolo.
It did. And Alondis Williams and Armando Bacot.
Where'd those guys go?
Honorable mention.
Oh, I see.
So, again.
So these AP folks, what universe of games are they watching that we've been not watching?
I don't understand. Sometimes the league just fools everybody, and you had to watch this league this year to understand Armando Bacot and Alondis Williams. If you looked at the numbers, they're having a good year. But the Player of the Year race came down to two players, of which Banchero finished third. Now, the idea of this whole deal about All-America teams and things like that, that's a cross-section of the country voting how much they follow the ACC. And I'm not dismissing Paolo
at
all.
Can I answer that question?
Sure.
They don't.
Right. That's ultimate. Ultimately, the people that are voting didn't watch this league.
Well, maybe they watched the Duke-Gonzaga game. Maybe that's what they watched.
Kentucky, opening night.
He's in.
He was pretty good.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Outstanding. And he's a really good player.
Yeah.
But he's not the best player in our league. If there's only one ACC player on first team, second team, or third team All-America, he's not that guy.
Right.
Sorry, he's not.
And some people yesterday when this was announced then came back and questioned the people that do follow the league about who they voted for Player of the Year.
Yeah, that's a joke.
That was interesting.
I'm sorry.
So.
That kind of stuff drives me crazy, too.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you got to – it's like Heisman voters. I mean, you know, you got to actually watch people play.
Yeah.
You got to watch the games.
I mean
– it helps when you vote.
Alondis Williams and Armando Bacot were the two best players in this league. That's why the Player of the Year vote came down to those two guys. And you know what you can do with that? Sharpie.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
Well, the person that went on Twitter this time of year is known for his Sharpies.
Oh.
And questioned the voting public in the ACC on Player of the Year.
Well, whatever.
So,
congrats though to Ben Carroll.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, well deserved. Anybody get an award in the league, we're going to promote it.
And congratulations this morning to Jimmy Boeheim, first team academic All America.
Big time. Not surprising at all.
Yeah. First since Danny Shays, who by the way does some radio now in Central New York with our friend Brian Higgins up there in for Galaxy Communications.
It's an impressive family on Boeheim Group.
Man, I want to tell you. So, Jimmy, congratulations. First-team academic All-American. Already got that Cornell degree. A little grad work there at the Orange.
Well-deserved there.
Absolutely.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
tons of guests are coming your way, Wes, including our next one from the University of Miami.
Winners of 8 of their last 10 and in the NCAA tournament is Katie Meyer and the Miami Hurricanes, live this morning from Coral Gables. This doesn't get old, getting ready to go to this tournament, does it? This is kind of what you're in the business to do, I think, right?
Well, that was the plan, you know, and we were a little off track early February and late January with just some delays and stuff. So when we kind of laid it out and saw what was ahead of us, it seemed like a very doable plan, and we just kind of put on our hats and shoes and went to work.
All right, so I want to jump to, obviously, you're playing Friday morning in Columbia against South Florida on ESPN2, but to say Destiny Harden's jump shot to beat Louisville catapulted your team, is that too strong a statement?
No, I mean, it was just a classic moment. I mean, I don't think it's one we'll ever forget, and then she just carried us. I mean, she actually carried us through the fourth quarter of the Duke win, too, that mm-hmm. people didn't really realize how much I was calling for that matchup for Destiny, and so she had that confidence going in, but when her eyes get big, and she has big eyes, beautiful eyes anyway, but when they get that big, we just keep giving her the ball. I just scream into my staff and my players and even my strength coach, like, what's Des's matchup? Like, what's her matchup? And we just kept going to her and going to her and going to her. And so she came through. And that's great. This is a wonderful young lady that just has a ton of guts and a ton of grit.
Coach, I got to give you props. You know, we've had Larinaga on a bunch. And every time we have Jim on, he's wearing some parka. Like he's coming to us from Antarctica. And I know it's beautiful down there. Hey, this time of the year, it's perfect down in Miami. And Coach, of course, has had a great run this year. So have you folks. But your setup is superior to Larinaga's. I just want to give you a little shout out before we get started on this interview.
Also, you'll see me wiping my occasional sweat off my brow. So absolutely, this is too long of a shirt. I'm hot right now. So it has been absolutely gorgeous down here. And we snuck off and went recruiting in the Northeast and got flight cancellations and delays and snow and sleet. And it was like, why do people not all come to Miami? It's so beautiful down here. I'm in shorts, and I really just have this top on because I have to look formal for you guys because, you know, I'm nervous.
Well, so are we. So we're all amongst friends here. We're sweating profusely as well here down here in the basement, even though it's not quite as nice as it is down here in South Florida. But you know what? Your team seems to be playing at the really peak maximum at the right time, right? I mean, not only did you have a great ACC tournament, and Wes mentioned winning 8 of your last 10, but 3 of those were against ranked teams. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, hey, we beat a bunch of doormats and it's kind of fool's gold. You're beating really good teams. I think the mental toughness of your team really showed in Greensboro, and that's got to be a good thing heading into the tournament.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, we've had a long delay, but I'm telling you, the whole season we played tough competition, and even in losses – you know, there's only one, maybe two games where we were a little bewildered at our performance. But other than that, I've loved this team. I mean, they have come through time and time and time again. And so, you know, we had been down 12 in Indiana and the Bahamas with like 2 minutes to go and had a 3 to win it. Same kind of run that we ended in the ACC tournament. So we kind of have these good memories, and they empower you. You know, they give you a little bit more faith to your confidence. Confidence can kind of come and go, but this faith, like, I believe, even if I'm not really, my shot's not hitting or I'm not guarding this girl properly, I know in the end, like, we have a certain faith, and that has really emerged. And I just felt so rewarded as a coach, just blessed to be a part of the journey of these players who stuck with it and really were able to flourish at the end here. And hopefully we can keep that momentum.
A couple of big picture things here before we dive into just the tournament itself and kind of the mechanics of that. This is the 10th time you've won 20 or more in Miami. The program stability is unquestioned there. But there is a piece of this. With this league where it is right now, and I can ask you this because you played in this league and you kept an eye on it from your playing days at Duke to the great work you've done since you've been there as the head coach. This is as good as this league has potentially ever been, Katie, nationally. I think we all can agree on that, right? To win 20 now – this is, I mean, of the 10, this has got to be a pretty good moment for you and what you've done there to play in the finals of a league this year that's been as good as this one's been.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I do. I can't believe a team like Boston College didn't get in. I mean, I don't recall a team with a positive win-loss ratio in this conference not getting in. We've had teams that were, back when we played 16, that were 7-9 and got in because 7 was enough. Like, under 500 was enough. So I feel for BC. I really felt like they would beat at least half the teams that are in this field right now. I understand it, but I just feel for them because I think it was – that's how good this league is that we should absolutely have had 9, no question, complete, like, honest from my years of coaching. And it's unbelievable. So to draw, you know, if you beat Duke and then Louisville and then Notre Dame in a season, you feel pretty good about yourself. And to beat them in 3 days and then play in the finals was a heck of an accomplishment. And it's a credit to those teams. I mean, it's not a credit to our team as much as it's a credit to, oh my gosh, how great are your opponents? And so hopefully our league, we feel really prepared going into the big dance now.
Okay, from, again, the brackets are set, and there's no need to whine about it or say, hey, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. We're going to roll the ball out and start playing and keeping score, and the best part comes. But were you a bit surprised from a seeding perspective for the league, top to bottom, given the quality of the conference?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the committee had some procedural things to consider as well. When you get 8 teams in and you can't play first 2 games on someone's court, you know, you don't want to play against a conference opponent. They really try to protect the first 2 games. The math starts getting hard, you know, and then we have 2 number ones. So there was only a place for Georgia Tech and us to go. And that was it. It was either Stanford or South Carolina because Louisville got the other number one over Baylor because they lost the championship. So as you started looking at it from the procedural perspective, you kind of have to throw out the actual seed or get your feelings hurt about the seeding because they have a very tough job. I would rather that we have 8 teams in and worry about the seeding than, well, you know, it's more convenient to only give 6. Like, we deserve 9. I'm telling you that. We got 8. The 8 need to perform, and we're ready. We're up for the task.
All right, so now this, the finality of this, and we've touched on during the week already, but you watch it last night on the men's side when they opened in the first 4. You know what the stakes are Friday morning when you play South Florida. You know what you get if you win the game. So how do you focus in? How do you spend these last 48 hours, 72 hours in the build-up to playing 2 days from now in Columbia?
Yeah. Yesterday the bear came out in practice. That's me.
I was wondering when the old hospitality of Katie Meyer in the practice session was going to surface again.
Oh no. Yeah. There's a certain zone we push into, and you know, it's funny because the veterans are like, okay, she's back. Like, we're ready. Like, it's one of those things where you have to bring the intensity and you have to put the internal pressure on your team before you leave, you know, tons of internal pressure. Like, they don't need to worry about anything else except the small, minute details in our practice, in our gym, in front of the 15 of us, period. Nothing else. Really amp up that internal pressure because that puts us in a certain zone. And then when we go and we have more external pressure when you're in an NCAA tournament and you're on someone's court or you're on a neutral court, but tons of fans and media and all this other stuff, the external pressure gets really, really high. So you better make sure that you've been handling pressure this week. And we can't generate 10,000 fans in a practice, but we can sure harp on the details and make them feel like everything is just on the edge of either win or lose, win or lose, win or lose. So everything we did this since the ACC tournament, every drill had a winner and a loser. I mean, it was last possession, last possession, last possession. Just keep amping up the internal pressure and seeing, you know, who can come through for us.
Katie, given the fact you're playing South Florida, was there not a way to negotiate a deal that, hey, we'll just meet you in Fort Lauderdale and cut back on expenses and the winner gets to go to Columbia? I mean, it would seem to make a lot of sense to me from a business standpoint.
I know. There's one thing, and honestly, so we had so many Florida teams get in, which is great for our state, and Central Florida is playing Florida. And, you know, the South Florida coach and I text each other, said, can you believe this? Like, it's, you know, but that is what it is. The last time we played South Florida, and we scrimmage them all the time in preseason, but the last time we played them, we went all the way to Alaska. We were in the North. So it's kind of crazy, but we're very familiar because we have a great relationship because we'll always meet halfway before every season. We haven't done it the last 2 because of COVID, but we usually meet and do an informal scrimmage and share everything. So this is going to be a game that's going to be very, very familiar, but very, very difficult.
All right. Here's the loaded question from the co-host. You've got great guard play. You've got great post play. What's most important in this event for you?
honestly, it's what you decide is your advantage, and then how composed is your team in adjusting, because there's just no way you go in with a game plan, and it's never happened in the how many NCAA, I really don't know how many I've coached in, but it doesn't happen how you script it, right? It doesn't. It does for a little bit. It does for a quarter here, 5 minutes here and there, but you got to go off script to win one of these games. Something is the coaching's too good, the preparation's too good, and frankly, the pressure's too high for some players. So you got to find it within the game. And I think that the mistakes coaches make is that they go into the NCAA, they don't coach what they see, they coach what they want to see. Mm-hmm. And you just have to sit there and figure out, wow, you know, maybe your leading scorer is having a Chernobyl. You know, like, you have to just deal with it. You don't have the next day to work through it. So those type of adjustments, I thought, even for us in the ACC tournament, I don't know if you saw me, but I'm running up and down my bench, running, asking for information, just asking for, you know, how they guarding Kelsey, what's going on, you know, because those adjustments need to happen on the fly, and it needs to be communicated very quickly.
You know, I don't think I have ever heard that term before. Our leading scorer went Chernobyl. Did I hear that correctly, or is it just too early yet? My leading scorer went Chernobyl. Is that right?
Yeah. I didn't put my filter on this morning when I woke up. I apologize for that.
I know. I mean, by the way, since the last time you were on the show, I believe you and I came to a somewhat of an agreement that I am your official international recruiting coordinator. I just want to let you know, Katie, that about 2 months from now,
oh gosh,
I'm headed to Italy. I'll give you the heads up. So you let me know what you're looking for. Point guard, forward, center, a four. You know, you tell me, because I'm going to be hitting the streets of Italy in about a couple months. So I just would give you the heads up on that.
I appreciate that. Good. So you're not going to go to any wineries or vineyards and no touring, just recruiting for Miami?
I have found that, quite frankly, the best talent can be found in the vineyards.
All right, I'll send you a list, but it might not be about players.
Well, all right.
Then bring
yourself back. Let me tell you, I'm going to go Chernobyl. That's what I'm going to do.
Hey, I guess here's the deal. Let me just tell you this. We've had Walls and Kenny Brooks on, and Wes Moore's coming on at 9 o'clock, and he's not offering this to any of those guys.
This is an exclusive.
This is just for you.
Exclusive.
This is all. He's not even. I mean, look, Nell Fortner's got two players from Italy, and he's not offering that to her either. No, so there you go.
It's just me and Katie. We when we got the tip off last October, we discussed this, and I said I will be your international recruiting coordinator.
I will take that challenge. I accept.
All right. By the way, we got to ask you this question too, because we've asked all.
Oh,
the
we
coaches.
Haven't had Katie on since we started doing this.
This is Katie's. Oh,
This could get very interesting.
Yeah,
right here.
Katie's six away from the mug. So this is her fourth appearance. So here's the deal, Katie. We've been asking all the coaches, regardless of sport, what is your ultimate? You personally, what is your ultimate walk-up music? What is the song that gets you moving in the morning? It could be game day. It could be off season, whatever the case may be. What's the song?
So there's two songs that I always this rolls through my head on game day, and I'm a Broadway musical fan, so this is not going to be as exciting for most of your audience. But there's a song called "This Is Me" from The Greatest Showman, and it's just about being glorious and just marching through and overcoming. And I listen to that; that just rolls through my head. On game day, so that I feel very empowered and know I can overcome whatever challenges are in the way of me and my team from being glorious.
I like it. So, by the way, the next time you appear, that song will be played as your intro to the. That's how we're rolling.
Thank God.
There it is.
Because there's a local radio station here that plays "We Are the World" every time they introduce me, and I can't even remember why. But please give me a different intro song than "We Are the World."
Yeah, well, it won't be that.
It'll be that in Italian red.
Yeah,
the next time we see
it. Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Always great to see you. Take care, and look forward to following you guys.
You guys are the best. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Katie Meyer, head coach of the Miami Hurricanes.
She's a trip.
Oh, my God. And
you know, another ACC team where both the men and the women are in the big dance.
That's it.
We got a bunch in this conference.
And just a terrific competitive player in her days. And that kind of attitude and intensity, that's when, you know, the bear comes
back. Bear.
Yeah,
right.
The bear comes back.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, don't forget women's lacrosse for you tomorrow night, Pack. The long-awaited number 8 Duke hosting Louisville. It's right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app.
I'm glad we're getting to that game because we've been promoting it for about 9 days. Finally get it tomorrow night.
Yep.
Hopefully the weather's going to be good. Yeah. Weather's not supposed to be good here today, so thank God they're not playing on a Wednesday.
No, they got it going on Thursday. Yep. Kenny Brooks joined us yesterday. Hokies are headed to College Park as one of those 5 seeds that I've had a problem with in the women's bracket.
You got 3 ACC teams on the 5 line. On the women's side.
And how in the world are they, I mean, just happenstance, they're all 5s? I mean, buying that. Anyway, we started our visit with Kenny by asking him, what did he learn by his experiences in the ACC tournament?
I found out that our team was who I thought they were. Mm. And they're a very talented group, very confident group. And when we had our kids go down, it was next person up mentality. And we never wavered, especially in that North Carolina game. We didn't know how we were going to win. We just knew we were going to win. And by the looks on their faces, you know, you lose the player of the year and you don't waver. And everyone just knew, okay, I have to be a little bit better. During the course of that game, I looked at Georgia and I said, look, you have to be the best player on the floor. And she took it to heart. And, you know, for the rest of the game, she was and played extremely well and willed us to win.
You know, you told us the story, like, I don't know, a year or so ago about her and being over here and, you know, the COVID situation, which, you know, kind of limited everything for her, right? And just her normal life and how she had to adjust. It seems a lot of that has also occurred in her play on the floor for you. I mean, Asia and Liz, fabulous. You got a really good team. You know that. But if Georgia Amore is there at the top of the list sometimes, Kenny, that makes you a better basketball team, doesn't it?
It almost makes us unbeatable. You know, that's how much confidence I have in her. And her struggles early were just because she was trying to facilitate to make everyone else comfortable. And we sat down and talked, and we talked about the importance of her being aggressive and being a scorer for us, and, you know, to play almost like a Steve Nash type. And, you know, yeah, facilitate, but also look for yours. And when she does that, she's dynamite. You know, she shoots over 40% from the three, and she shoots a lot of them. She gets into the lane. She facilitates for others. And then defensively, she has grown so much in her, you know, year and a half here that it's monumental for us on the defensive end. So when she's playing that way, I think that we can be unbeatable. And I just love her attitude. She's become a leader. She and I are really joined at the hip now, and, you know, we communicate more. Sometimes when she gets a little bit excited, I can't really understand her because of her Australian accent. And then, but she's adjusted very well, and she stops and she talks extremely slow, and she has a Southern twang now, and it just makes me laugh. I'm saying, you definitely have adjusted to Blacksburg.
The Southern twang Australian combo.
I need some more of that. I got to hear some of that.
That's a new one.
You need to have her on, and you will love it.
That's a new one. I want to go to Liz Kittley a second. We know what a great player she is, but the fact that she won the Kay Yao Scholar Athlete of the Year too. I mean, this is like the perfect poster child for what it's supposed to be about in terms of college athletics. Isn't it? Great player, great student athlete. Terrific person. I mean, you're really blessed from that perspective to coach her.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys have had her on. You got to know her a little bit. And those awards are wonderful. It shows who she is, you know, in the public. But she's an even better person, player, and teammate behind the scenes. She deflects any attention to her, and she just wants to put it back on her team. She understands that she couldn't do what she's doing without, you know, her coaches, her teammates. You know, I try to get her to talk a little trash sometimes, but she won't. And, you know, she just, you know, that type of kid. And, you know, she is a poster child for a student athlete. She's a poster child for being a Hokie. And we're extremely blessed to have her. And I think that she has really transformed our culture and into a winning culture. And I love coaching her. And I think that she's been a big reason for our turnaround.
Kenny, was it tough for her to go through the situation in Greensboro, not being able to play, just, kind of understanding bigger pictures type stuff here, I guess?
Yeah, it was. She probably the most competitive kid that I have, that I've ever had. Mm-hmm. She wants to win every drill. Yesterday, we were warming up shooting, and I make her shoot 60 form shots. And she made 59 in a row, and she missed the last one. And you would have thought the world was ending because she just wants to win everything. But she really loves the success of the team, of her teammates. Mm. And when she couldn't play, she tried. And she and I had like a little private 30-second conversation at halftime of the North Carolina game. And I made the decision that she wasn't going to play. But I said, you need to be the biggest cheerleader that you can possibly be. And she took that to heart. You know, I had to stand up for most of the game in the second half because she was screaming so loud on the bench, you know, being a cheerleader. And then the next day against North Carolina State, she did everything she could to make herself available. And she went and warmed up. And then she came in and she and I had a 5-minute conversation. And I told her that I was making the executive decision that she was not going to play. And she cried. She cried because she wanted to go out there and just to help her teammates. It's not that she wants to go out there and score points. She wants to be available for her teammates because she knew how important that game was for us and our program.
Florida Gulf Coast. So what do we know about this crowd now?
Oh, gosh. They are extremely well coached. They are not a 12 seed. I really would like to be behind the scenes to figure out how they got to be a 12 seed. And, you know, they're 29-2. They're ranked in both polls. They're ahead of us in the coaches poll. And so how does that equate to a 12 seed and we're a 5 seed? So we know they're going to come in motivated. Their first 6 players are seniors. They play a very unique style. They're almost like a unicorn. We've never seen this style before. You know, so we're running around trying to figure out, you know, how we're going to guard them. And, you know, so I got into a frenzy a little bit saying, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? And finally, my assistant coaches had to stop me and say, hey, coach, they have to guard us too. And so that made me feel a little bit better. And so it's going to be 2 teams with totally different styles trying to figure out how they can will their way. But they're extremely well coached. We thought we shot a lot of threes because we led the ACC in 3-point attempts, and they've shot 300 more than we have on the year. They shoot 36 a game. So that's enough. Ooh. That's why I have bags under my eyes right now, because I'm just watching film all night trying to figure out how we're going to, you know, make it tough for them.
Good matchup.
Yep.
Should be fun.
Yep. Looking forward to watching Kenny's team as well in the NCAA Women's Tournament. They, of course, are in College Park, Maryland for opening round play.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.